welcome to Architecture Talk Tongue. I am Sarah Colada, an architect and organizer of the Disrupt Symposium, the first of its kind business of architecture event, bringing to stage major architecture practices to cover topics related to entrepreneurship and practice operations within the AEC industry. I am an architecture business development consultant, and my goal is to raise the financial well-being of architects through effortless business growth. Each podcast episode features an expert or thought leader from the AEC industry who shares their journey, challenges, and advice. Now, let's dive into this episode and welcome our guest for an exclusive interview. Andrew, thank you so much for joining me today to talk a little bit about your career and where you're at today with your businesses. I'm so excited. Let's start with the beginnings of it all. Tell me a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, well, my career is something that confuses most people when I talk to them about it, because it's always kind of just been like following what gets me excited and what I'm passionate about. But I think it's been pretty consistently in the areas of content, in the areas of storytelling, in the area and in the area of creative industries. So, you know, the idea that, you know, we have a business in the architecture and design field right now is something that is surprising to some, but not surprising to me. So I really, you know, I began my career in television, you know, a few decades ago, not to date myself too much, but really at the dawn of, you know, interactivity coming into media in new ways. So this is still a little bit before the advent of YouTube. But, you know, we were in my first firm, I was 22 and my bosses, the co-founders, were 27. And we were just kind of making kids and arts programming with a really deep bend into technology that created experiences around the core content. So that was something I did for a while, and it led me into more digital things, where I went off and worked for a few, you know, small startups, sort of figuring out where I was, whether I was a salesperson or a marketing person, or, you know, what type of person I was going to be. And, you know, as it sort of turns out, I like doing all of those things. But, you know, notably, I ended up in a communications agency, a global comms agency, and I'm from Canada. So I was running the Canadian digital business, actually starting the Canadian digital business back when agencies decided they were going to get digital. So this was, you know, at the very beginnings of Facebook and Twitter and all those things being a part of the way that, you know, brands tell their stories. So it was exciting to get to do that for some of the biggest brands in Canada, as well as, you know, the Canadian outposts of some of the biggest international brands, because of our global network of clients at the firm. And I did that for a number of years before I again kind of pivoted and landed in a role where I was taking a lot of those skills, but I was using it in a large financial institution, actually looking at the talent side of all of this. And so in that role, I took my tech background and did a lot of procurement work, did a lot of work to really bring, you know, the technology pieces together for our brand in terms of how we both spoke to our talent, you know, retained them, and as well as attracted talent. So I was also running the global talent acquisition website, which, you know, was getting millions of hits a month. And just managing the way that we told those stories, the way that we integrated technology, you know, with all how all of that worked. And as my time there came to an end, my business partner and wife and I were really brainstorming, because she has been in the luxury design industry for well over a decade. And, you know, we're nerds. So we've had a business brainstorm on one of our early dates, and talked a lot about, you know, opportunities for disruption and innovation in the architecture and design space. And, you know, flash forward 2.5, almost 3 years, and, you know, Digby is our company, or one of our companies. We also operate an importing business as well, and much more of the traditional side, but Digby is how we bring technology into that. And, you know, I've really taken my past in terms of storytelling, in terms of, you know, a comfort with emerging technology, as well as a passion for really helping to enable people, which really came from my most recent role, and pulled that all together into the value prop that we offer at Digby, which our cut line is people-powered innovation for architecture, design, and creative in industries. So that's kind of how I got here. I tried to make that brief. How did I do?
No, you did really well, honestly. And I was like listening to you and thinking, wow, this is great, because obviously with my architect's brain, I'm thinking about, you know, the traditional career and like how we get educated to be architects, and you know, we don't get much business coverage at school and all that. And I was like, wait a minute, you're talking about comms and your experiences in tech, and then obviously talent acquisition and business. And I was like, how are you going to end up in architecture? Like, you know, where is this connect? Because you're talking about everything that's missing in our profession that we don't traditionally learn. And it's obviously a source of a lot of pain and discomfort for architects as they start businesses, because it's like, oh my God, how do you do it? And you had all this tremendous experience, really, coming from, you know, the industry of business and comms, as well as like talent acquisition, which is really interesting. I want to ask you about that as well. And ended up in architecture through love, which is wonderful. I love it.
Well, and you know,
here you are.
The thing I'd say, the two things I'd say is, one, that my job in comms, we were really consultants, particularly because emerging tech was like, it was originally just me. And by the end, my group was about 25 people inside of our team. And, you know, really what we did was we helped businesses to understand how technology could help impact, you know, their bottom line, their ability to get their message out, their ability to drive customers, because we became a full service digital agency effectively by the end. And really what that required was the ability to go into businesses and learn about them and understand how to impact them. And that's really, you know, what I've tried to do in the architecture and design fields, is take all of my background and creative knowledge and really start to understand this industry. And it was something that I did, you know, for more than 60 clients at its peak when I was consulting. So, you know, I'm really used to sort of showing up in industries and learning about them and pulling them apart and putting them back together. So, you know, that's been serving me really, really well. And the thing that architecture and design brings that very few of those other clients actually bring that I love is we're making physical things, and they're things that people love, their favorite building, all the way down to their favorite chair. And, you know, I really love the physicality of that, coming from a lot of background with bits and bytes and digital things. And I love fusing those two things together. So that's something that makes me really passionate about what we do today.
No, absolutely. You're right. And also another like great benefit to it is that we're somehow trained to make things out of nothing, out of a thought. And that's just so powerful. And when you look at business, it's exactly the same. Entrepreneurship is that you just like kind of have a thought about a business you want to build, an experience of how people collaborate and co-create together, and then you make it happen. And yet, you know, from the perspective of architects, we seem to not be like building business is not our strongest suit. And obviously this is what we're here for, you know, with the podcast and the magazine, to bridge the gap and talk a little bit about those things. And I think I wanted to dig a little bit deeper to your comms experience, because I think that there is a lot to get out of it for our audience. And mainly what it is that it's very interesting how communications come to play in order to market and send a message about either a product or a service, right? And in case of architects, it's services, not products. But again, it's all about the action you take and the steps you take in order to position yourself in front of your ideal client. Do you have a tip for an architect or some really interesting story you can share from your comms days as to how you marketed a project or a product in a really innovative and interesting way?
You know, honestly, I find that the simpler that you get, the better it is in a lot of these instances. So, you know, what we talked about a lot in those days and what I still talk about a lot today is the idea of reputation. It really all resonates from reputation. And if you think about how you want to be known and how you want to make people feel, the comms, the marketing, all those things are really just tactics to bring that to an end. And it makes it really easy to say, you know, is this activation going to be better for us than that activation? Is this spend going to be better for us than that spend? If your baseline is really around, like, how do we want people to think about us? How do we want to make people feel? And I think that those who are really excelling in the architecture and design spaces do that incredibly well. And oftentimes they're able to do it without really any formal marketing or comms training because it's so authentic.
Architecture Talk Tank is sponsored by the good people at Integrated Projects, a team of architects and technologists focus on the digitalization of the built environment. Did you know that there are more existing buildings in this world than websites? Yet only 0.0001% have been digitized. In response to this, the Integrated Projects team launched BIMIT to digitize any space imaginable. Offices, homes, mechanical spaces, you name it. Now any architect, engineers, or reality capture specialist can convert their 3D scan into LOD 200 BIM, just in hours, not weeks or months. Why does this matter? Well, now we can accurately view, verify, and quantify the spaces that we design, build, and operate. To learn more about BIMIT, visit www.integrated-projects.com/Sarah Collada.
And if it's when you work with the biggest companies, from a marketing and communication standpoint, you sit around tables and have like whiteboard sessions about being authentic. But when you're able to just be that, when we have a podcast as well, and we talk to leaders of architecture firms and you know, design leaders and whatnot, and the authenticity, they don't have to say it because it's so evident. And when that can just show up, and when you can find a way to market and communicate just your being, what you are, I find that that's the really powerful stuff. And I find that the firms and the leaders that we come across that are the biggest and have the most growth and the most exciting projects, it's because of the fact that from the founder down to, you know, the drawings that they send their client, that authenticity is just so evident and so clear in what they do. So I really think that's the biggest tip, is to be true to yourself and to figure out the best ways to make that transparent to other people.
Mm-hmm. I love this. And authenticity really touches almost on like a spiritual notion, because you need to know who you are and own it in order to really show up authentically. And that's so beautiful that you say that it's like a really important element of business, of your presence and your communication strategy. I, for example, got really inspired. I was watching We Crashed yesterday, mm-hmm. Thing.
Yeah.
And it was so interesting how he was using PR and like comms to position his like message in front of a potential investor. He wanted money from this Japanese investor, and like, you know, not only went to speak at a conference in India, but also soon after, like, published an article in a magazine in Wire. And when the guy read it, he was like, I'm coming to New York, and within 15 minutes I'm gonna be in your office. And it was just so interesting to see all the tactics of how we can use comms also for client acquisition. And I know that a lot of big architecture practices do that. In fact, also relates to reputation setting, and in the respect of if they want to inquire big projects, they'll publish something in the magazine that relates specifically to their ability to fulfill that big project, right? And mm-hmm. oftentimes it's also very specific to the type of project, be it a hospital, you know, in which case you need to show that you understand like building healing spaces, right? Or an aviation project where it's an airport or something like that, but very specific, and you use communications to position that thought leadership, that reputation, and the message to obtain clients. And I love that. Tell me about your furniture business. You're obviously working with architects and selling that. Tell me a little bit more about that. It's so interesting that you went into products and like working in that space.
Well, that's my wife and partner's forte. And so, you know, she here in Canada was running, we work in the contract and commercial space, so much more on the B2B side. And, you know, she was running, launched and ran a number of different brands, most recently a fairly major one. I don't know if we're name dropping here, so maybe I won't, but one that everyone, I think, in the architecture and design world would certainly know. And they were a part of a couple of really major acquisitions over the course of the past few years. And as those acquisitions happen, you know, she was working for the boutique element of that brand that kind of got diluted through those acquisitions. And, you know, it became a really interesting and exciting moment to venture out on our own. So that sort of coincided with that little brainstorm date that I mentioned. And we really set out to say, you know, how can we take this commitment to beautiful things? And, you know, another really important tenet, going back to that point of authenticity in our business, is this idea of protecting authentic design. And so, you know, we really want to tell the story of the designers and the visionaries who created these pieces and why they stand the test of time. And we want to bring that into the commercial spaces that we work in, right? And so we talk about, you know, an office space, and I think it's a really poignant and important time to be bringing the kind of products that we're bringing to these spaces, because the vision of what people want in an office and the thinking of what people are looking for when they take the time to leave their house and go to their employer's location, they're looking for much more immersive experiences, much more beautiful experiences that, you know, put themselves in a position where they feel like they can be productive for their employers. And so we feel like we represent, you know, a line of really beautiful, authentic products that help do that in a meaningful way, but are also built with an incredible amount of quality. Because obviously, if you're in a public space, and, you know, this was particularly and most obviously true when you think about the hospitality work that we do, when you've got, you know, a hotel lobby or something like that, where, you know, hundreds and thousands of people are coming through it. But even just in any office space, you want something that's beautiful and memorable, but also something that's well made and enduring. And I think that that's something that, you know, is a great investment for these firms, but also who are you know, furnishing their office with these products. But also, it's something that's a great investment from the people side, which, you know, to go back to that part of my own career, I think is so important as we reimagine what work is and what collaboration is in these physical, quote, office spaces. You know, it's never going to go back, I don't think, to the cubicle rows. These kinds of common spaces, these warm moments inside of corporate settings, are getting more and more important. And so, you know, we think it's a really exciting time to be bringing that to the market, and you know, trying to do that with that infusion of technology and doing things just a little bit differently in terms of our process of how we make things easy for the specifiers, who are really you know, the creative minds that bring that warmth into those spaces.
I love this. It's great. And your experience in technology comes in handy. And that brings us to Digbee. Tell me a little bit more about Digbee. I wanted to really dig into this topic and understand a little bit better how you're helping architects with it and the story behind that as well.
So the story is, like, I don't think it ages very well, but it's kind of quirky at this point. I mentioned this was a couple of years ago when we were having, almost 3 years ago now. So, you know, mid 2021. And if we're tracking these things, that was kind of the height of the crypto and NFT bubble, as it were, not to discount Bitcoin's recent resurgence, but, you know, particularly on the NFT side. And so, as a part of some of our early brainstorms, we had this sort of postulation of, like, what if, like, there were NFTs for furniture pieces? You know, what if there was an NFT for an Eames lounge and ottoman, that type of idea? So we really started to pull the thread on that and say that, you know, like, where is the appetite for technology within this world of, you know, wood and metal and, you know, handcrafted items and things like that? And, you know, what it kept leading us back to over the course of the next 2.5-3 years has been that the humanity is something that you can't pull out of it, and that technology has its place as long as it's done so in service of the authenticity that we were talking about, but also in service of making a great experience with the product for the end user. And so, you know, flash forward, and, you know, there's sort of three technology pillars to what we do with our business now. We still work, you know, I think most people know now that NFTs are backed by blockchains, which are digital ledgers that create a record, amongst a whole bunch of computers that say, this is a true thing, this is a real thing. And so, you know, we do work with some firms who are looking to say, we want a digital record of our authentically designed furniture. We want to have a digital ledger that says that this customer bought this product on this date. And, you know, where that gets really interesting is, down the line, it actually becomes a real opportunity for manufacturers who are working through resellers to get actual first party data from their customers who they might not often have regular touch points with. So that's really, really powerful. But also over time, it allows them to start to build up and tell an even more detailed sustainability story. Because if you had an office chair that had casters on it, and that was, committed to the blockchain when it was purchased by an end user, and then 6 years in, the casters needed to be replaced, that replacement can be also added to that ledger. And over time, you can really start to understand, this concept of circular economy that gets talked about a lot in a truly verifiable way. So, it's early days for this kind of stuff because, in the world of contract furniture, that could take 25 years to really play out.
But also technology moves really fast. And I think that once people adapt to technology, there's no going back. So we might think, and this is the interesting thing, like there was obviously a rise and fall of the concept of NFTs, but this element of smart contracts, it's kind of a sustainable way to maintain that technology forward. A lot of people use NFTs to sort of trade and also to contract their work, but also to trade their work. And there's definitely been a lot of artists online that made money of it, but then with the follow-up of Ethereum, that sort of element of it died out a little bit, right?
But yeah, not absolutely. To say,
a little bit though, because again, you never know what's gonna happen when crypto goes up again. And then, these are sort of fluctuations that technology comes and goes. Some people are laughing today at the metaverse, and fair enough. When I organized the first Disrupt Symposium 2 years ago, we covered the topics of metaverse a lot. Now it's almost like, no one pays that much attention into it. And I think it was directly related to the financial and the economy, rise and fall. But it's not to say that there isn't like sustainable applications now with AI as well. When things get connected and people start moving more into using these tools, once it takes on, it takes on. I think once a firm or any type of furniture brand or especially product manufacturers, I think that's tremendous for starts using that technology to actually track the buy and sell of each item. It's like almost by all means that everyone who's going to be using these items need to somehow interact with that technology, and then sooner or later it might take on. I think it's just a matter of whether the companies will find that to be something that is fulfilling a need for them. But it does make sense, especially in the furniture sector. And tell me a little bit, like, moving forward, as you obviously had to experience this rise and fall of NFT concepts, and certainly not to say that it doesn't happen anymore, but the hype is gone for now. How did you guys kind of focus in on things that can be more sustainable and find a way to still sell it to clients to maintain that concept of a business?
This episode of Architecture Talk Tank is brought to you by the MGS Global Group, a team that provides on-demand CAD and BIM drafting, as well as renderings for architecture firms. In today's environment, with everyone experiencing a surge in projects and staffing challenges, MGS Global can deliver your drawings on time and within your budget. So why work with MGS Global? Their customer service is exceptional and they provide quality for value. They have completed over 5,000 projects worldwide, a testament to their work. Now you can focus on design and let MGS do the rest. Check them out at www.mgsglobalgroup.com.
Yeah, so, and then that was really the evolution on the NFT side. Like, you capture this idea of hype cycles really well. And I think that's what happens with technology, right? Is people want every technology to be the next best thing. The media is all over it. So I'm glad you said metaverse as well. But on the NFT side right now, it's really about, to your point, smart contracts. It's about helping people with digital customer touch points, which I think is something that's really sustainable. And the fact that the blockchain kind of got caught up in the hype of crypto, You know, it's kind of like you've got a good kid who gets caught up in a bad crowd or something like that, because it's a good technology. And so, you know, similarly on the metaverse front, you know, we spent a lot of time exploring that. You know, we launched an innovation award show with Sandow Media called the Metaverse Architecture and Design Awards last year, where we were really trying to celebrate, you know, people who are trying new things in the space and that idea of 3D spatial design as being core to it. And so, you know, Mark Zuckerberg really took that word and did some things to it that people weren't happy with. But one of the biggest drivers of our current state business is helping, again, furniture manufacturing brands create sales focused experiences using 3D spatial assets. So, you know, what we've really found, and this dovetails into the AI stuff that we're doing as well, is that once the whole hype cycle dies down, the real businesses start to emerge. And so what we really saw was there is and were a ton of people who can say, I'll build you a metaverse, no problem. Like, let's get on our goggles and let's go into it. But when you work with firms and you talk to them a lot, you find out like, most people don't want to put goggles on their clients, first of all. Most people don't want to have them around. So, you know, where the 3D space has really become most valuable is where you have the image quality and the ability to digitally manipulate objects, but you do it in a strong business context. Mm-hmm. So now we're using it to help create much more robust configurators. We're using it to help people, you know, imagine new products and launch new products within their business, enable their sales teams back to this idea of being really people integrated, like not making it this a scary, oh, you know, sales teams, look out, this is coming. It's like, no, how do you use this to help them with their volumes? How do you use this to help them to teach their clients to self-serve? And then the amazing thing about it is it's all a digital ecosystem, right? So you can have your product, configure your product, turn your product immediately into a Revit file that can be specified on a project. And all of that can happen within one digital interaction that theoretically can be self-serve. So, you know, on our podcast a year and a half ago, we had one of the leaders from Crate and Barrel, who's their leader of product, as well as at the time he was their head of metaverse, which is a bit, again, of a hypey thing. But he's pulled that vision through. And really what they're thinking about at big manufacturers like that is, how do you think about the life cycle and the totality of a 3D asset and all the things that you can do with it, from concepting a product to marketing a product to you know, specifying a product and you know, customizing a product? Those are just some simple examples. So the idea that these digital files that, you know, we once thought of as just like, here's your Revit, here's your CAD, can be so much more interactive now and can bring your buyer into the cycle. That's something that's really powerful that we're working on now that, you know, we might have called metaverse 18 months ago. But really, it's about creating a better buying experience for a very digital savvy young specifier and making their life easier. So it's about removing friction. And I think that that's a great dovetail into what we're trying to do with AI right now as well, which, you know, if I had to say, of all the hype cycles we've been through, this one is probably going to be the most real. There's always smoke. There's always extra. But the reality is that there is a significant opportunity for transformation with AI, whereas, you know, the blockchain and the metaverse examples get a lot more targeted in terms of where they can make an impact. And you kind of have to wait for the hype to die down to find those. With AI, it's almost like, how do you get broader? You know, so from our, with our current work, you know, what we're doing, and this is where we're really touching architecture, is we're working with firms who are sitting on just a ton of data and helping them to figure out where is the best data that they have that can be enabled and can empower AI, and what are the processes that can be impacted by that. You know, you hear a lot about Midjourney and like, let's rapid concept some designs, and absolutely, yes, that's one thing. But you'd run into IP considerations with like, definitely some bigger firms are slow to roll out their AI because they're worried about, you know, committing all of their intellectual property to the cloud. So they're starting to create, you know, the things are moving out of the cloud and becoming local, local offline instances where firms are bringing all of their data and IP together. But there's lots of other opportunities for that too. If you think about finance processes, if you think about marketing processes, if you think about talent acquisition processes, if you think about anything to do with your back office, there are all of these areas of administrative data intensity that are really meaningful too and can help you run your business faster, smarter, leaner, you know, be more cognizant of legal and other challenges that are coming up. So, you know, the breadth of the potential of AI is something that we're also really focused on and really bringing that into architecture firms right now as a part of what we're doing at Digbee.
Well, I love it. Tell me a little bit more specifically to the data you refer. Is it to do with design data? Is it like the amount of files so that the AI can learn about a certain approach to design that firm has? And what is the data and what are the applications of that data? And how can architects fully understand where Digbee comes in?
Yeah. So if you think about an architecture firm, right? You know, the IP of the design is their product, but supporting that product, you know, there's also an entire marketing effort. There's also a back office that includes risk and compliance, which is really important when you think about things like building code, right? And then there's also just, you know, the back office around how does the finances of the organization run? How do they acquire talent? How do they think about those things? What we're doing with Digbee is we're looking across all of those different instances. And we're saying, where do you first of all have the best data? Because, you know, data is a funny thing. It, you know, I'm sure you've heard the expression before, garbage in, garbage out. Garbage in, garbage out at scale when you use AI. So, you know, you can really quickly turn left and not turn back kind of thing if you're not being thoughtful about what kind of data you have. How clean is it? Like, how much do you trust that this is good data, that it's accurate, that it's structured? This is a big one. Data structure is a really big concern in some areas because, you know, a lot of architecture firms were and are smaller scale. Like they're family businesses that have grown to a certain size, right? How you architected that data in the very beginning, how digital is it? How well organized is it? Those are things that are really, really critical to where AI is going to be able to make the most impact for your firm. So, you know, what we kind of do is come in and look across all of those different places where data exists and say, you know, let's be honest with ourselves. Where is the data the best? When we identify where the data is the best, then we can start to postulate, here are some different ways we could use that data to improve our processes, our client offering, the way that we market ourselves, you know, the speed with which we can create a concept, the speed with which we can respond to an RFP. There's so many different places where there's data that exists inside a firm. And so the biggest thing that we try to do is say, where are the places we can make the most impact? And then how do we get started as fast as possible? Because it's a fast moving space. And the concept, another concept in addition to this idea of data intensity, which is like, where is the data? But there's also the concept of agility, which is where can we move fast? How can we pilot something, get it out into the world, learn from it, get our people involved in it, right? Like that's a huge part of it. These decisions need to come from the top down. You need the support of the top of the firm, but they also need to come from the bottom up. They need the teams to have their hands in them and be working on them. And, you know, they're the ones who can be really honest about how good the data is, right? If you're the head of a certain size firm, you might just, you know, have a bit of a halcyon view of what things are like. But when you really get down with the teams and talk to them, they might go, oh no, this data is not going to lead us down the right path if we try to scale with it. That really needs to take some time to be cleaned. And so maybe that particular area isn't the first area to address. Maybe it's something that, you know, might not be as obvious, but the important part is getting the organization accustomed to working with the tech, getting the organization accustomed to this idea of technological agility. Because the thing that's really cool about architecture firms is they're agile by design. Right? Like that's how a building gets designed, is through this concept of agility. But they often, in my experience with working with some firms of all various sizes, don't think about themselves as technologically agile, even though the principles are quite similar. So that's been kind of where we've really found our foothold with AI, and have found that we can, you know, bring some really valuable impact to firms. Just because there's so much opportunity with this technology to change the way in which a business goes to market.
I love it. Absolutely love it. So what is next for you? Tell me.
Well, I mean, the thing that's really exciting for us right now is that we have these two kind of concurrent businesses. And so the idea of bringing them together functionally for ourselves is something that's really exciting. You know, without being, and this isn't something that's imminent, but you know, what we're really working towards is you have these processes that allow you to sell a chair onto a project, right? Get it spec'd. And you have these AI and 3D spatial and blockchain technologies that can create, you know, new kinds of efficiencies in all sorts of different ways. One is much more scalable, on like the technology is much more scalable than the physical side. How do we bring those two things closer together? How do you create a much more scalable vision for the future of the way in which, you know, these projects get done? How is it that, you know, we can become a firm that increasingly architects and designers want to work with because of the fact that we bring them value in new ways? So we're really thinking about how the two businesses complement each other as sort of a primary in the way that we're working. And the work that we do on both sides of the coin really helps us to advance in our thinking in terms of where that's going to be possible. We're just very much of the opinion that there is a huge disruption opportunity at this moment in our industry in an incredibly positive way. And, you know, we want to be a part of that.
Yeah, absolutely. Actually, I wanted to ask you, because you recently finished a course for AI application for growth. Mm-hmm. And I know that you're looking to help organizations implement AI in their businesses for potential growth. Tell me a little bit more about this, because it's obviously a big topic right now on everyone's mind. And practically every person I talk to in the industry is wondering whether AI is going to replace their role, or they're going to have to rapidly shift from the way that business is done right now within architecture and design to something different in order to still, you know, stay in control of the process, I guess. And then obviously it's very interesting how it impacts business, you know, in the smallest scale. For example, ChatGPT, I use it practically daily, oftentimes also bouncing ideas, right? Like I come up with a strategy for marketing, communications or sale, and I'll just be like, hey, how would you approach this? Or what, you know, it's just incredible, really, how much input it can have towards business and business strategies that before were completely self-managed. But tell me a little bit more about your approach and like what you learned and how you're seeing this impact the architects, architecture organizations, design organizations.
Well, yeah, that's a lot of what I was referencing before, really, is drawn out from that course and some other learnings that I've had. And, you know, as a result, some different like LinkedIn groups and communities that I'm a part of where, you know, we're kind of talking about this stuff all the time, you know. But really, I think that the key principle there is understanding how do you come in and understand where there's intensity of data that can be, you know, leveraged. How do you think about how to help the organization think about being agile in terms of how do you test out your hypotheses around where your best data is and learn and see how it can impact you? And then how do you exercise this both top-down and bottom-up approach where leaders are engaged as well as, you know, the overall team are both engaged collaboratively to figure those things out? And I think a lot of what comes out of it is exactly what you just said, Sarah, which is like these ideas that AI has these day-to-day moments that are so powerful, right? You can go into ChatGPT and start to create your own GPT. I was on a panel at a conference last week where we just, like, I was the moderator, and we just turned the thing over to the audience and just let them ask questions the whole time. And we spent an inordinate amount of time talking about the idea of creating your own GPTs, which is this idea that, you know, you make a marketing GPT and you just keep going back to that same tab in ChatGPT over and over again. And over time, it really learns your voice, the way that you talk about your business, the way, you know, that you like to organize your thoughts. And it can really become your assistant over the course of a few short weeks of really just working with it. So, you know, that's really the smallest scale of where we're working with firms, is like, how do you do that? How do you embed that kind of thinking and that, you know, we sometimes call it an innovation muscle inside of your organization? And then all the way up to the biggest, where, you know, we're working with heads of design technology for global firms to say, you know, what are the right places to put our efforts in so that we can get moving on this quickly? How is it that, you know, we can think about organizing the data that we have and prioritizing the projects that are going to bring us the most potential benefit with the most speed? And then, you know, getting that agility element brought into that innovation muscle, so that you're thinking about, let's prototype things quickly, let's learn. The old Facebook terms or saying was move fast and break things. In this case, we don't want to necessarily break things, but we do want to move fast to make sure that we can quickly understand what's going to work and what's not going to work, and then continue to iterate and build on top of that. And again, I think that is inherent to the architect's mindset in terms of the way that they think about their project work. It's really just about helping them gain a comfort with a new technology and apply that same spirit to helping them improve all sorts of different areas of the way they work.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. Have you heard about the technologies that allow you now to just type in that you want to, like, I don't know, a 3-bedroom house, and it literally designs the whole house, but also like optimizes bathrooms for space and like where the windows should be. It's just incredible. And when we see that AI has advanced to that level right now, where it really, really can take out of business like a lot of smaller to mid-sized practices that are in the residential sector, because once it's designed and it's following like all the building regulations and things like that, you can just pass on these plans to a build crew, and it's basically like practically taking the architect out of equation. And that's creepy. But when we see that already happening, then on a larger scale, it's like, what will the next few years bring in respect of more complex solutions? Because end of the day, when we think about like office space buildings or even apartments, right? To high-rise apartments, it's really just blocks that are plug and play. Like a lot of these designs of kitchens and bathrooms and the spaces around it are to a certain size, and you know, they don't really vary so much for example, for development. And so end of the day, there is just a certain slight changes that need to be done on plan for a specific location, but we do know that the kitchen will be a certain size and it will have its usual amenities. So therefore, out of a sudden, this is scalable. And the more scale you put onto it, the more creepy it becomes. Whereas we look at our work and what we do, and it's like before, we would not only sit for hours on plans, right, developing everything, but then the facade design and everything on AutoCAD. Now we already have tools that do it in minutes. But then even the presentation of our designs, in the past it was like Photoshop, and you would sit there and use the one tool to mark a human being around, then to plug it into your render, and if your hand slipped, you had to start again. And right now you have this type of tools on your iPhone. Just by clicking, you click the background disappears, whatever. I mean, even your iPhone does it right now, cutting out images like people from the frame. So it's really just kind of insane how it takes away amounts of work, and you know, in many ways it's great if you were to shuffle and focus on what the human element, the value of the human element in the process is, and how we move forward with technology in order to adapt and still not lose the this intrinsic value that we bring into this project as a human being through our design thinking, etc. But nevertheless, I think that a lot right now in the industry is it being talked about, you know, will my job still survive? Like, am I still going to be here in 2 years? And how is it going to look like my day, you know, and working on a project if half of it is done by AI? Do you have those type of conversations with your clients, and what do you think of it all?
Constantly, yeah. I've done a few talks on this as well at some different conferences and whatnot. And like this idea, you know, I think when you come to our website right now, there's actually a pop-up that says AI won't take your job, but someone using AI will. And I think that's a great quote, because I really believe, and I we've seen this happen multiple times throughout history, where a new technology comes in and it threatens to disrupt. And really what it does is it changes the jobs. So, you know, the one that I talk about a lot in these presentations, there's two. One is when they started to add sound to movies, there was an outcry from the industry about the jobs of the orchestra players who used to play alongside the silent pictures. Right. And then about 100 years later, when Excel and Lotus Notes and those sorts of programs rose up, there was an outcry saying, what about bookkeepers? What about, you know, the people who are using their ledgers and, you know, pencil and paper? And really what it does is it changes the jobs. Because, you know, you think about now how many audio professionals work in the film industry. You think about now how many accountants and you know, financial strategists there are that sit on top of a backing like an Excel tool, right? So really what you need to think about is how are these things a co-pilot? You know, I believe you said in your own monologue there, how does it change my day? And that's really part of when we think about that top-down and bottom-up strategy. How do you work with firms to help them understand? How does it change your day? How do you automate out things that used to take you 3 hours that were really crappy and boring and you didn't want to do them? You can get rid of those things now and you can do things that are more interesting and more creative. And if you think about things in the process, in the life cycle of bringing an architectural project to life, where you go, wow, I really wish I had more time for X. You know, selfishly from our own other businesses side, we wish people had more time to specify furniture so they could really think about what those products are going to be and really apply their creativity to it. But there's a lot of, you know, let's call it administrative stuff that they're plodding through that AI can really help clean that up, can help make that a lot more of a pleasant process because of the fact that you can automate away some really bad jobs, some really bad parts of the process. So, you know, that's really where we try to think of it from. It's not about eliminating jobs. It's about augmenting the jobs that you have, creating a co-pilot. I mean, you've got your co-pilot recording our conversation here today. That's going to help you to create an article and do all these other things. That's exactly what we're doing in our process with firms, is helping them to figure out where can some of these processes be improved so that people can do different things. You know, a good one is building code, right? The process of looking at building code for a design is something that could have been really laborious. Well, now there are specific AIs that will do that for you, and they'll do it based on the jurisdiction that you're in, and they'll help you do that and look at it with a global view, right? Those are things that it's really, really simple for the AI, but would have been really monotonous and time consuming for a person. So if you think about the fact that really what this is theoretically doing is elevating us all to be more creative and to have more time to be analytical and strategic, I think it's a really exciting time for the industry. And, you know, the most important thing is to think about it that way. And then coupled with that is back to the beginning of our conversation. How is it that, you know, relieving those time constraints and giving you more freedom and more opportunity can allow you to be more authentic? Because that allows you more time to be human, because you're not taking on administrative tasks and tedious jobs. You actually have more time to tell a story, more time to be a creative. How do you use that to become a better firm, to be, you know, to do better work? And I think that's really what the exciting opportunity is that it should be creatively liberating to say, I'm going to be able to get rid of some of these jobs. I'm going to be able to go from, you know, zero to a strong concept faster than ever before. I've always loved the expression that when you're, you know, 90% done a project, you still have another 90% to go, because that's where the deep details come in. Well, AI helps you get to 90% way faster than we ever could before. And it allows you to spend a lot more time on that second 90%, which is what really turns great projects into incredible projects. It really what makes the work as memorable as it could be. So, you know, that's my optimistic glass very, very half full sort of spiel for where I think AI can take the industry and what it can actually do to improve the work lives and the work itself from firms.
I love it. Andrew, thank you so very much for joining me on this podcast. It was so interesting to have this conversation. I love what you do. I love also how you're contributing to the architecture field and helping businesses grow. I think it's super important to adapt this new technology. And yeah, so if people want to get in touch with you, where do they go to find you?
Yeah, I'm super easy to find. Meetdigby.io is a great place to find us. If you want to check out our other business, it's houseofdigby.com. So both of those exist. And you can find me on LinkedIn pretty easily as well, just Andrew Lane. And I'm the guy who's at Digby and House of Digby, and always happy to chat.
Amazing. Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you so much. I really appreciate the invite. It was fun.
It was. Thank you.
Architecture Talk Tank has its own frequency. We're not a regular podcast, but we are here for you, always. If you have a suggestion for a guest or have a story that others in this community can benefit from, please contact me via social media or email me directly at me@saracolara.com. To sign up for my newsletter, simply go to the website saracolara.com. I am on Instagram, YouTube, and LinkedIn. You can find me by typing my name, Sara Colara. Come say hi. I'm always excited when you reach out. Bye for now, and see you in the next episode.